people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, or no, my phone is sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish it didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.immc.org, for Monday, January 24th, 2011. Israel released a report absolving its forces from wrongdoing in an attack on a humanitarian flotilla last year, the left 9 aid workers said. Survivors of the attack roundly criticized the report Sunday, calling it a whitewash and a farce. On Sunday night, the Israeli army raided the Palestinian village of Nabi Saleh for the third time in 2 weeks and arrested a 14-year-old boy. Last week, the army raided over 20 Nabi Saleh homes, photographed youth, and collected their ID information. Nabi Saleh is a small village west of Ramallah, which has been using nonviolent demonstrations to resist the confiscation of their land by the neighboring Jewish settlement of Halamish. Also on Sunday, settlers assaulted internationals while they were escorting Palestinians to their pasture to graze their herd in Umm al-Hir in South Hebron Hills. Settlers threw stones at the international activist and stole one of their cameras. Umm al-Hir is a Bedouin village close to Susia, which has been suffering by the encroaching settlement of Carmel. Some 1,600 newly leaked documents on peace talks with Israel, obtained by Al Jazeera TV and given to The Guardian, provide a glimpse into the breakdown of the peace process. They reveal the PA offered to give up East Jerusalem, but Israel rejected the offer since it didn't include settlements in the West Bank. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today from International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.immc.org. This report has been brought to you by Husam Kaziz and Lumina M.
Let's begin our weekly report as usual with the nonviolent activities in the West Bank. One child was injured. Many protesters suffered effects of tear gas on Friday when Israeli soldiers attacked the anti-wall protests in the villages of Belain, Na'aleen, and Nabi Saleh, Central West Bank, in addition to Al-Masara in the south. This week, protests were in solidarity with the Israeli activist Jonathan Pollack, 28, who is serving 3 months in Israeli jail for his solidarity work in the West Bank villages. One child was injured, other protesters treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation during the weekly protest at the village of Nabi Saleh. This week, protesters gathered at the nearby village of Beit Rima and marched to the village of Nabi Saleh. Every week, the Israeli army closes the village to stop local Israeli and international supporters from joining the villagers of Nabi Saleh in their weekly protest. This week, protesters managed to go through and reach the village. Later, people marched to the lands Israel wants to take over to build settlements. Soldiers fired tear gas at protesters. Alaa Barghouthi, 12, sustained light wounds when a soldier sprayed his eyes with pepper spray. The protest ended with clashes between local youth and Israeli soldiers. In Bilayin village, as is the case every Friday for the past 5 years, Israeli and international supporters joined the villagers after the midday prayers and marched to the Israeli wall built on lands taken from local farmers. As soon as the marchers reached the gate of the wall separating local farmers from their land, Israeli troops stationed there fired tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets at them. A number of protesters suffered the effect of tear gas inhalation. In the nearby Nalin village, Israeli soldiers attacked the protesters as soon as they reached the wall. The protest started shortly after the midday prayers, which was held on lands owned by local farmers near the Israeli-built wall. Local sources said that soldiers fired tear gas at them. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. Israeli soldiers arrested on Friday an international supporter during the weekly anti-wall protest in the village of Al-Masara near the southern West Bank city of Bethlehem. Villagers, along with their international and Israeli supporters, marched after the Friday prayers. Israeli troops prevented them from leaving the village and attacked some protesters with rifle butts.
And Saturday, two NATO occupation soldiers were killed in an IED attack. Baghdad, Iraq, yesterday, a blizzard of roadside bombs, car bombs, and suicide bombings killed at least 10 people and wounded at least 35. Police said at least two of Sunday's attacks in the capital involved car bombs that apparently targeted police patrols, killing two policemen and a bystander, while two other people were killed when the offices of the government's sewage department downtown was bombed. Another bomb exploded as a busload of Shiite pilgrims drove by in a probable sectarian attack. Karbala, Iraq, last Thursday, a pair of car bombs blasted through security checkpoints ringing the Iraqi holy city of Karbala Thursday, killing at least 51 people, most of them Shiite pilgrims headed to observe yearly religious rituals. Authorities estimated as many as 183 people were wounded in the near simultaneous blasts set off by suicide bombers driving cars packed with explosives. Ali Kamas, a pilgrim from the Shiite neighborhood of Sadr City in Baghdad, said he saw a car speeding towards one of the checkpoints, its driver refusing to stop despite warnings screamed by Iraqi soldiers. Kirkuk, Iraq, Friday night. A joint Iraqi-U.S. checkpoint was attacked by unknown gunmen in southern Kirkuk's Leyland Township. Quote, a group of unknown armed men opened fire Friday from a fast car before escaping to an unknown destination, someone told Aswan al-Iraq News Agency. Wait a minute, U.S. forces manning a checkpoint? Whatever happened to U.S. combat operations in Iraq being over? Oh yeah, that's been said before. Mr. Barack Obama, do these sound like wars you can win? If not, now's the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. We'll be right back.
down on a brick.
January 11th, 2002. Guantanamo Bay open for business thanks to George W. Bush. January 11th, 2011. 9 years later, President Obama has still not delivered on his campaign promise to close the torture chambers at Guantanamo Bay. And the cages still ring with the cries of the tortured.
All right, get it.
How do you plead?
On January 11th, 2011, 173 protesters in orange jumpsuits and black hoods showed up in front of Obama's White House, one for every man still held in that hellhole at Guantanamo Bay. They turned their backs on a promise-breaking president by marching away to blockade the entrances of the Department of Justice to sit-ins instead.
It's been a greater disappointment than Barack Obama, but Eric Holder is running a close second. So I'd like to ask these guys who are representing the 103 Muslim men still detained at Guantanamo, if you would please take off your hoods and let America see the American citizens who come from all around this country to decry the policies that allow cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment of prisoners, that allow the torture of prisoners, that allow for no investigations on those tortures.
The things that really strike me are that last year, the results of a four-year investigation, an internal investigation into the lawyers in the Office of Legal Counsel who wrote the torture memos, the memos that attempted to redefine torture so that it could be practiced by the CIA, John Yoo and J.S. Bybee. The four-year investigation concluded that they were guilty of professional misconduct. But Attorney General Eric Holder allowed a man called David Margolis to rewrite the conclusion to that report and to suggest that actually Yoo and Bybee were only guilty of poor judgment because of the pressures that they were under. That was a terrible failure.
Yeah.
Attorney General Eric Holder inherited a department here at the Department of Justice that was reviewing the Guantanamo cases, that was preparing for the challenges to the detention that were mounted by the prisoners in the district court. And he made no changes to the setup that was in place when President Bush was in power. Lawyers here in the Justice Department have been pursuing the cases in the district court without any regard as to whether there is a case to be answered for any of these men, whether these men should be freed rather than have their detention challenged. And this has proceeded to this day. President Obama established a task force to review the cases of the Guantanamo prisoners to decide who should be freed and who should be held. But there has been no sign that there has ever been any cross-referencing between those findings and the ongoing habeas corpus petitions, where on a regular basis, Justice Department lawyers are sent to the district court to make the most implausible arguments. Sometimes they've been ridiculed out of court by the judges in an attempt to defend the detention of these men. So sadly, the Justice Department seems to have failed when it comes to the necessary efforts to close Guantanamo. And I really wish we could see some more independence.
You're more than an hour and a half in the snow, and after three different deployment configurations, the police refused to arrest any of the protesters blockading the entrances to the Department of Justice. Probably they feared an ugly courtroom spectacle over the treatment of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
On Martin Luther King's holiday, the 17th of January, protesters showed up both at the FBI's headquarters in D.C. and at Quantico Marine Barracks in Virginia, where Bradley Manning is being held, 7 months, no trial yet, incommunicado, isolated from day and night, on charges of passing documents to WikiLeaks.
These people want to punish. If they want to enforce laws, if they want to find criminals who are harming the world, we can start with some former employees from across the street. We can get them the addresses of Jay Bybee, of John Yoo, of Alberto Gonzalez, of Haynes, of Delahunty, of George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney, and Cheney doesn't live far from here. So we are not opposed to the FBI enforcing laws. We just want them to start at the top instead of the bottom.
Especially when there are people of color, people of Arab or Muslim faith, people of Latino descent, when they see the police come, everybody's scared. What have we done? What have we done when we've created a culture where our youngest people are very afraid? And that's part of what we lose. So I don't speculate about what Martin Luther King might say today, but I want to bring that energy and spirit of justice, real security from the community out, back for us to hold on to and for everyone to help do their part to create that vision, that reality, and not a reality of fear, of a speculation. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you all very much for coming out today. We really appreciate it. Is there anywhere else we should be today than here on Martin Luther King Day supporting the number one prisoner of conscience in this country?
Quantico!
Bradley Manning is doing this for us. He's not a traitor. He's a patriot. He's trying to make this country a better country. He's trying to get the people of the United States to see what we are really doing around the world. He's trying to spread the word of truth and not let the propaganda of the Pentagon dominate the media. And our participation standing with him is critical to that. We need to stand with Bradley. He is doing this for us. If it was not for him, we would not know for sure that the State Department had been turned into a nest of spies. We would not have seen the collateral damage video, collateral murder video, where we saw our troops killing civilians wantonly. If what he's accused of doing is true, he is a true hero. He's paying for it right now in solitary confinement.
I'm out here from Berkeley, California. I'm the director of the National Accountability Action Network. We work for torture accountability for those gentlemen who David just mentioned. David's contributing his book to a care package that we're giving to Bradley Manning today. We're going to do everything we can to get it to him. If you have something to go in that package, I just wanted to announce that I'll be collecting stuff at Quantico. Come with us to Quantico. Give me anything that you want to give to him. If you have a warm blanket, sheets.
How about a saw blade?
If you have exercise equipment, small exercise equipment to give to him. These are things he's being denied that we want to furnish to him in a humane way, something the military is not doing. Thank you very much.
So wrapping up at the headquarters of the FBI, once referred to by supporters of the Branch Davidians as the Federal Bureau of Incineration, protesters van pulled out to Quantico Marine Barracks, besieged the front gate, taking over about half the road, and attempted to deliver the care package to Bradley Manning. Here comes a second attempt to deliver the care package for Bradley Manning.
Take this to Bradley. Take the package. 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 Take the package for Bradley. Take the package for Bradley.
Take the package. We go.
Take the package for Bradley.
Marines refused to accept the care package for Bradley Manning, preferring to see him held in Guantanamo-like solitary confinement. Nonetheless, protesters did succeed in getting onto military property, occupying one side of the main access road to the main gate of Quantico Marine Barracks, a place where you don't see a lot of anti-war protesters very often. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM, from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Something.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave labors. Craftsmanship, low price to flip, to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave.
Uh-huh.
Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize,
yeah,
soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them
for
being paid less than their male equivalent.
On these issues and more,
we can't afford more to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart,
it's not a good fit for Chocolate City.
Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, Sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Oversee your plantation mentality, results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they wanna come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me.
They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
20th of January, protesters returned to the Woodley Park home of Dick Knapp, senior vice president of Folger Pratt. Folger Pratt owns the abandoned Chevy dealer on Georgia Avenue and is trying to sign a lease for the site with Walmart. Dick Knapp is project manager for this attempt to bring the most destructive retailer on earth to D.C.
Walmart drives crazy staff. Keep Walmart out of our town. Walmart drives crazy staff. Keep Walmart out of our town.
Walmart doesn't bring real economic development to the areas it comes. Exports all profits out of the district and will only decimate small local businesses like Tres Pinos, which is a store I went and visited last weekend, who's already planning on moving because he knows his business is not going to survive once Walmart moves in across the street on Georgia Ave. The second, in the district, we don't have enough affordable housing. As a recent college grad, I can't afford to live in this city anymore, and that's ridiculous. And thirdly, Walmart funds anti-state candidates, people who oppose equal voting rights for the people who live in the District of Columbia. As a D.C. resident, supporting a business who doesn't think I should have an equal voice in government is not something I want in my community.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Fox so-called News had the nerve to accuse this peaceful protest of inciting terrorism for this protest outside the developer's home, a protest even Faux News admitted was peaceful. They also used this opportunity to smear Acorn again.
Inciting terrorism or threats of terrorism, that clearly is beyond the bounds of the First Amendment. And what makes this different, as in the cases where Acorn used to do the same thing to banking CEOs,
is that we're talking about peaceful protest outside an executive's house, not flying a jetliner into a building full of executives like terrorists would do.
Shame on those press.
Looks like Dick Knapp, the Folger Pratt, is going to have some explaining to do to his neighbors about how his proposal to rent a space on Georgia Avenue to Walmart has brought all these protesters out to his neighborhood. I wouldn't want to have to explain to my neighbors why I was bringing Walmart to town and why my conduct brought out all these protesters.
Walmart's not good!
That's a confirmed fact. Two-thirds of Walmart's congressional campaign cash flows to politicians who voted against statehood for D.C. Okay, Walmart. Okay, Folger Pratt.
Listen up, Dick Knapp.
Walmart comes, we'll be back.
Listen up, Dick Knapp. Walmart comes, we'll be back.
That's right, Mr. Knapp. D.C., there's no sleep for the wicked. Meanwhile, there is talk in Congress of giant budget cuts that would totally eliminate Section 8 rental assistance and cut millions from the rest of public housing. With the return of the GOP to Congress, we are once again seeing efforts to smash all forms of public assistance for those the Walmart economy leaves behind. They want to take away our jobs and rehire a few of us at two-thirds pay at a shiny new Walmart. Next, they want to take away our housing assistance, even as Walmart comes into town with new lower wages. Most Walmart employees cannot pay rent without public assistance, and now they want to take that away at the same time we get our jobs replaced with a shiny new Walmart. The combination of Walmart wages and no Section 8 means only one thing. A lot more evictions, a lot more families made homeless. Meanwhile, the D.C. government keeps closing homeless shelters and shuttling families off to overflowing shelters miles away from downtown and overflowing with former residents of now closed downtown shelters. What are we all supposed to do? Commit suicide to get out of the way of progress and development? Or organize to defend our homes and throw down the Republican Party, the developers, and the rich who want us gone forever? Where are we supposed to go? And what are we supposed to eat? How much of this shit are we going to take?
Across the United States, Republicans who took control over state legislatures and governorships in the November election are pushing hard to enact tougher voter ID requirements. According to the American Prospect magazine, the legislative push on voter ID bills has already begun in North Carolina, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Kansas. Voting rights activists say that new voter ID laws discriminate against senior citizens, African Americans, and low-income voters. They also maintain that ID laws waste taxpayers' money at a time when many states face budget deficits. Critics like the progressive think tank Demos point to research showing there are few cases of people impersonating another registered voter at the polls. According to a study by Barnard College, there were only 24 convictions for illegal voting across the United States between 2002 and 2005. And most of those cases involved people who were not eligible to vote, a situation that could not be detected by voter ID laws. The 2008 U.S. Supreme Court case Crawford v. Marion County, which upheld Indiana's restrictive voter ID law, also required states to provide IDs to people who do not have one, money that could otherwise be spent on improving training for election workers and educating citizens about the voting process.
Welcome to War of the Trees on WSQT Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
In a world of corporate domination and utter ruin, whosoever shall have the courage to take direct action against those who are ruining our planet and our very lives.
On January 13th, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency reversed a permit approved in 2007 by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for the largest mountaintop removal operation in West Virginia, Arch Coal's Spruce No. 1 site, straddling Logan and Mingo counties in the coal-mining southern region of the state. The agency cited concerns about the potential impact on both the environment and human health. Mountaintop removal entails using tons of dynamite to literally blow off the tops of mountains to mine the coal seams underneath, and then dumping tons of waste into valleys below, sometimes covering up headwater streams. Groups opposed to mountaintop removal celebrated this decision, but have opposed some EPA actions that have granted permits for other mining sites. Mountaintop removal opponents are working for a complete ban on the process. Coal interests and West Virginia's congressional delegation, which now includes former Democratic Governor Joe Manchin, who won the late Senator Robert Byrd's seat, are calling for legislation that would rein in the EPA. And Acting Governor Earl Ray Tomblin, along with the coal industry, West Virginia legislators, and labor unions, organized a rally on January 20th to demonstrate support for coal mining in the state. Between the lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Vernon Haltom, co-director of Coal River Mountain Watch, about the mixed messages in the EPA's rationale for reversing its Arch coal permit approval.
There were concerns about the cumulative impact on the streams, the water quality, the vast number of miles, you know, several miles of streams that would be buried, and human health impacts. And we were glad that they included that information. What the politicians aren't telling people while they're ranting and raving about the EPA is that there was a plan that probably would have met EPA's approval. It still would have buried over 3 miles of streams, but it would have cost the company about 55 cents more per ton of coal to do this other plan. So it's not the bright shining light from the sky that the EPA is suddenly going to start vetoing permits in mountaintop removal. It's just that, well, Arch Coal didn't want to spend 55 cents per ton to go with the other mining plan.
Some opponents of mountaintop removal have been more enthusiastic than you are about the EPA's decision on the Spruce No. 1 mining site, but you're saying it was a really close call and it's not precedent-setting?
Well, back in April, I believe it was April 1st of 2010, the EPA announced these strict guidelines that they were going to be using to scrutinize permits. And Lisa Jackson stated at that time that no or very few valley fills would be permitted. The first permit that they applied this guidance to, they did approve. It was the Hobet 45 permit, and it was over 3 miles of streams that they approved to be buried. You know, going from 3 miles of unburied streams to 3 miles of buried streams is not an improvement. But what happened in that case was that the EPA and the coal company arrived at an agreement based on re-engineered mining plans. And a similar re-engineered mining plan was put forth for the Spruce No. 1 mine. In this case, the coal company did not want to go that route and instead chose to basically throw the game, make it look like the EPA was completely unreasonable, and cast them in a bad light, and give ammunition to the various politicians who are clamoring for the EPA to be gutted, essentially.
Vernon Haltom, I went on the Friends of Coal website and saw they're calling for Congress to rein in the EPA. Do you also expect coal interests to file a lawsuit against this EPA decision?
I think they're probably going to attack it in a couple of ways, possibly in the courts and definitely the legislators. You know, legislators from West Virginia, what they amount to is coal industry lobbyists on U.S. taxpayers' payroll. They will do what they can to try and strip the EPA of whatever powers that they have. And in this case, you know, it would be stripping them of the power to enforce under the Clean Water Act. I mean, the Clean Water Act is a U.S. law that applies to all of the country. And what they're trying to do is to make it very difficult for the EPA to actually enforce. And it could have vast consequences everywhere.
So what's the next step for those of you opposed to mountaintop removal?
We've sent out the word and sent word to EPA that we support their decision in this case and that they should take stronger steps, deny all mountaintop removal permits, and abolish the practice. It kills people. We're not talking about salamanders and minnows or mayflies. We're talking about actual people who breathe the dust clouds, who drink the water, who get flooded out of their homes and killed in floods. All these things that kill people, yet the industry wants to maintain that we don't exist. There's a lawsuit against the EPA based on their April 2010 guidelines that Governor Manchin filed, that the National Mining Association has filed, and I believe the state of Kentucky has filed against the EPA. And Coal River Mountain Watch has intervened in that lawsuit on behalf of the EPA. That's one thing we're doing, trying to, you know, stay in the legal loop there and intervene when we can. But this rally on Thursday, we are also showing up to have a counter rally. Acting Governor Tomlin told people to come and show the EPA the impacts of coal on the people of West Virginia. Well, what he meant was people who draw a paycheck from coal. I don't think he was counting on those of us who suffer negative impacts to show up.
That was Vernon Haltom of Coal River Mountain Watch. Contact the group by calling area code 304-854-2182 or visit their website at crmw.net.
Climate scientists in South Asia are making a new push to accurately document the loss of glacial ice in the eastern Himalayas, the water source for 1.3 billion people in South and Southeast Asia. Glaciers in the eastern Himalayas feed Asia's major river systems, including the Ganges in India, the Indus River in Pakistan, and the Mekong River, which runs from western China through Southeast Asia and spills into the South China Sea. In Nepal, the Imja Glacier is melting by 70 meters a year, reports the Interpress service. In Bhutan, bordering India and China, 25 glaciers have lost an alarming volume of glacial ice, shrinking by 20 to 30 meters a year. In recent years, there has been controversy over the quality of climate research on glaciers in the Himalayas, prompting a new effort to develop reliable climate models in the region. Some climate scientists fear that recent disputes involving China's dam building along the upper Mekong River will overshadow the need for better climate research and data collection.
There are 13th of January. The siege of fortress continued as animal rights protesters showed up at the offices of Nomura, which shares a board of directors and is one of the largest stockholders in Fortress, the lifeline of puppy killing Huntington Life Sciences.
Quit my job this morning.
I know.
Said forever, I would hold my head up high. Once and for all, 500 animals died today.
No!